Great, thanks. And I'd like to acknowledge one of the other co-authors, Helen Wang, is also here. So she actually did a lot of the data collection on this, so we'll be able to help answer questions as well. So no relationships. Similar to what Tanya said, I'm sure you all know this, but HIV and AIDS are increasing among women on a national scale. And in particular, we're seeing HIV sort of spreading nationally as well from more urban areas into rural areas. So in California, there's only one county now that does not have a currently living individual infected with HIV. And that's changed pretty dramatically in the last even 5 to 10 years, where there wasn't much in the rural areas, and there's a lot more now. So minimal research exists on rural women, particularly in the western U.S. As you all know, it's more more in the southeast. But generally speaking, rural populations have less access. So we set out to kind of understand what was going on in rural California with HIV-infected women. So we wanted to look at what kind of medical care they were getting, and then also kind of look at what the barriers to care and what their unmet needs were to kind of hope understand a little bit about what kind of care they were getting. So as a retrospective cohort, we worked with 11 randomly selected facilities that served large rural areas. We had a 4-month period that we were sampling from. Defining rurality was a major issue in this study. So we picked facilities that served rural areas and then asked women, do you live in a rural area? Because many of these facilities served both less rural and more rural areas. So it's not the most scientific definition, but when we looked into scientific definitions, California is particularly complicated, and we just decided to let the women tell us what they thought and understand their experiences. We had a very low response rate. That's a major limitation of this study. We were not allowed by the IRB to contact women directly. They had to go through their providers, so that was a major problem for this study. And then statistical analysis was fairly straightforward. So you can see it was exactly half white, 30% Latina, and about 16% Black. If you compare this to statewide HIV in women, we're overrepresented in white and underrepresented in African American. Although we think that actually this might be representative of the rural population, because the African American population is more concentrated in urban areas. And Latina, there is about 30% of the HIV cases in California and about 30% here, so they're represented about right. You had to be 18 to participate, so that did skew this median a little bit, but you see it wasn't a particularly young population. Almost everybody had health insurance coverage, which this was an in-care population, so that's not super surprising, but it was high levels. Almost all Medicaid, Medicare. Mostly single, the vast majority single, and most living below the poverty level, many providing for minors, and 70% unemployed. It's actually not that different from some of the other populations in other areas. This also is probably pretty typical for rural areas, vast majority driven by heterosexual contact. So medical care. We actually had 94% that had ever had antiretroviral therapy, and about 89% were currently taking it, but only about 20% were on a combination therapy option. Adherence was not very good. You all know they need to take more than 95% of their medications. And we had about 9% that reported, I'm sort of doing the opposite here, 9% that reported missing a dose in the last 48 hours, and almost 20% that reported missing a dose in the last 30 days. So not great adherence. We had almost 86% that had a CD4 or viral load in the past 6 months. They should be having one every 3 to 6 months. We did see some improvement, you'll see here, in the CD4 counts over time. So 27% under 200 when they were first diagnosed, and only 5% now. So that's good to see. And almost 85% were undetectable viral loads at the most recent test, which is almost the same proportion that are on therapy currently. So we think that's probably similar. A lot of comorbidities, not surprising, a lot of hepatitis, a fair amount of tuberculosis, and a really major burden, again, not unusual compared to some other, especially rural studies, but of depression, anxiety, other mental illnesses. So most of you probably know for all of these, we'd like to see this be 100%. Remember, this is all women. So, we're seeing sort of between 80 and 90% of screening and immunizations, except for the hepatitis B, which is down around 70%. So again, not horrible, but not where we'd like it to be. So then, like I said, we asked a lot about barrier to care and social services. I'm going to talk just a little bit about it today. Some of it's been presented or written about elsewhere. But so the major issues that women brought up were physical health, being too ill to actually make it to the services. Transportation, always a biggie in rural areas. And then actually this ability to find your way through the system was a big one. So what's interesting about transportation when we looked at it is there's a very high correlation between being able to drive yourself and reporting not having, or taking a taxi and reporting not having difficulty getting transportation. It was really the women that were relying on public transportation or someone else to drive them that had a much more difficult time. And you can see that the non-orange on that side, those the yellow, red, and blue, they reported some difficulty. And I should actually say this population, most of them were traveling 30 to 90 minutes to care. So it wasn't super close, but we expected a lot more 90 plus than we actually had. So they were getting care within reasonable proximity, depending on your definition of reasonable. So we also asked them kind of what their unmet needs were, and it was really shocking to us that this is, again, in-care population. 62% told us they needed a doctor. And we were talking to them at their doctor's office. So even though they had a primary care doctor, they weren't necessarily happy with that person. They wanted specialty care they weren't getting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that was their biggest need. So then this chore or homemaker services was an interesting finding as well, that 50% just needed help with groceries, house cleaning, all these kinds of things that, you know, nobody really provides. And I suspect a lot of the agencies around probably didn't even know that those were major needs. And then, of course, the housing thing, again, always big in HIV populations, and particularly in rural areas where there's very few housing programs. The housing was actually tied for local support services, which we think also, again, got back to this, I just need help sort of living my life, transportation, groceries, et cetera. So those came up very high. And I can talk about more about either of those if anyone's interested. We have a lot more data on those. So I already talked about likely pretty biased sample, low response rate. We undoubtedly selected for healthier individuals who wanted to tell their stories. It was in-care women only, so obviously the out-of-care population has very different barriers and needs. We were not able to do multivariable analysis because we had such a small population. Medical chart, you guys probably all are aware that sometimes they're really good and sometimes they're not. And so that was all the medical kind of piece of it. And then I talked about the rurality, difficult to define, especially in some of the, you know, some of the areas of California where it's we meet definitions of urban in areas that are definitely not urban. Like I said, sort of 80-85% had kind of pretty much everything we would hope they would be getting other than maybe being on combination therapy. But we see some real issues in adherence. We'd like to see improved screenings, immunizations, viral load, CD4 testing. And we didn't ask any really questions about kind of is your mental, what's going on with you in terms of the mental illness, is that need being met and how? But clearly the mental illness burden was extremely high. So the major barriers, again, physical health and transportation, and the major service needs were sort of a medical home that they felt comfortable with, as well as specialty care, chore assistance, and housing. So then these are probably all things you're all in here familiar with too, but things that might help, of course, mobile clinics, providing direct transportation or reimbursing for transportation, with the former being better than the latter. I think that some of the text messaging reminder stuff is getting exciting. It's cheap, it's easy. Almost everybody has a cell phone now. So I think that's an area that hopefully we'll see more rural providers using. The need for case management was pretty well met in this population. So we were wondering if maybe case managers could be used a little bit to medical case managers, not sort of social case managers, to kind of link to services a little bit better. So we thought that might be an avenue. Virtual support groups are another thing you guys are probably all aware of, but that are really gaining some traction and really helping individuals in rural areas. Assessment of client needs. Providers, again, the chore services is not something we really expected, and I think a lot of the the agencies didn't know that that was going on. And the other thing is we collected this data a few years ago, and we have another study going on now that's sort of similar to this, but a lot bigger. And we're hearing that needs are increasing as services have been slashed in the last few years with the recession. So this data is pretty dated because of the economic situation. So I think everything's much worse now, unfortunately. So that's all. Just acknowledge the team and everyone who helped with this and the facilities and the subjects. And my contact email is right at the bottom. I can also give people cards. And Helen, like I said, can help as well. So do you want to do questions now?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything immediate? Okay.
Oh, there's a couple. Yeah. It just takes them a second to percolate.
Let's see. As far as comorbidities go, did you happen to look at any renal failure comorbidity? Because I know that's becoming increasing.
No, we did not.
Repeat the question.
Oh, the question was renal failure. Did we look at renal failure, correct? As a comorbidity, and we did not, right? Is that, it wasn't on there, no.
Does your current study also include women who are out of care?
Our current study is actually part of a really large study that's being presented here. It's called the Medical Monitoring Project. Some of you may be familiar with it. This was sort of a pilot little thing we did to kind of get ready for that study. So it's actually men and women, and we're actually focusing on the in-care population only. There is a separate out-of-care study with that. So, but again, we're focusing on the in-care population, and it's not just women. And unfortunately, we were hoping to look at this over several years, because that we're interviewing almost 500 people a year, but we're getting so few women that that's actually made this study look a lot better to us in terms of getting as many women as we are able to, because in California, it is still a very male disease. Yeah.
So the response to the question, being a doctor, were you able to drill down at all to find out what about clinical care they regarded as?
Only anecdotally. So the interview was a structured interview format. However, as many of you know, even in a structured interview, a lot of times people do give you additional details. So like I said, some people were not happy with their doctors, some people needed specialty care, but we didn't explicitly drill down. Helen, have I missed any kind of, what were the things people said about the needing a doctor kind of need? Do you remember anything else? Yeah. One thing that's actually also is really interesting that I didn't present is that people actually had fairly high confidence in their doctor's HIV/AIDS knowledge and ability, which again, a lot of the rural studies suggest that a lot of times they don't feel like they're doctors. They either feel like they're stigma or other things. So actually in our group, they had fairly high confidence, but they didn't necessarily like them or feel like they were treating them well, which is like very interesting. But they had confidence in their knowledge. So, yeah. I'm sorry, what was?
The level for service needs, or like chores and all those, did you look at stage of illness or socioeconomic status on what, on their factors involved?
Yeah, so the socioeconomic status was related to chore needs. We didn't look at level of illness, and that would be interesting. Look at like sort of CD4 counts, et cetera. But also so many of them had such low socioeconomic status that it was, again, it's such a small number that they're all kind of clustered around there. But stage of disease would be interesting as well, just to see if the ill, sicker folks. That's a good point.
Yeah.